Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 50, which also happens to mark the one-year anniversary of this podcast. I am so proud of how far this has gotten based on the audience and the feedback we've gotten. It's been absolutely incredible. We've had incredible guests on here, and I really want to thank everyone for being able to make this podcast as special as it is, and it's going to get even better in the following year. I'm really, really happy about it. So without further ado, I want to talk about a little bit what this podcast is about, which is at the 3D Symposium Conference, which I was at a couple of weeks ago. That was held in Cancun, Mexico, which was a pretty nice place to have a conference. And the 3D Symposium Conference is centered around the Architecture Visualization Group. And so what happened there is there was a panel that was being held and moderated by Jeff Muddle, who, as we all know, is the founder of CG Architect. We decided just to record the entire panel and have that as a podcast, which is incredible. I mean, the people that were in this were really, really great. So for those of you who are in the architecture community, here are some of the people that were involved. We had, obviously, Jeff Muddle, who was moderating it. We had Nikos Nikolopoulos as well, and Chiro Sanino, and Pedro Fernandez, and Thomas Medve from MIR. There's a lot of talk about the incredible work of MIR, and Efim Arman as well, and of course, Thea Lima. We all know who Thea is. He's an incredible person. Mani Mora, and Patricio Navarro, who is the CEO of ARX. So, unbelievable panel. We talk about the future of and the lessons learned in the business of the Architecture Visualization Group, which is a very growing group. For those of you who don't know this, and there's a lot of VFX people that listen to this podcast, the Architecture Visualization Group, and I'm not talking about architects, I'm talking about architectural visualization, is probably about 20 times larger than all of visual effects. So it's a really big group. The subject of my talk while I was there was mainly about the influence of architecture visualization and what it has had on the entire CG community, and specifically what I think the roles and responsibilities are going to be related to VR, because I think that architecture and VR is basically, it's like peanut butter and jelly. They're very, very important. They go together really, really well. And I think that architecture can help the VR world a great deal. And I think that the VR world can help architecture as well. Speaking of VR, this week, you guys will probably be privy, hopefully it'll come out this week, that's the goal, to have our new guide to VR that we're going to be putting out. We're going to be doing a couple of great projects that we're going to showcase to show you what's potential to do in VR with V-Ray right now. One of them is done with Aldo Garcia, who was the main host of the 3D Symposium. His project, which is the famous Tadao Ando Church on the Water, we did a VR version of that, which looked incredible. And we also are doing one with Bertrand Benoit, and he did one, which is the National Library in France. And it's a beautiful piece of architecture, and we did a VR version of that. So we showcased those two projects, and we'll show you exactly some of the things that you need to know to make your own VR project inside of V-Ray. So big stuff coming up. Last announcement for, again, the architecture community that's coming out is we announced this week at Autodesk University V-Ray for Revit. It is out for public beta. If you guys want to give it a try, go to v-ray.com, look up V-Ray for Revit, and you can go ahead and register to be on the beta for that. It is actually a really incredible product. It is very much geared towards the architect in mind. It is not a complicated piece of software the way you would see it in Max. It's really made to be simple and just render and just do what you expect it to do. It's really cool. Check out the demo on our YouTube channel so you can get an idea of how it works. Anyway, with all that said, I really hope you guys enjoy this podcast. I know this intro was a little long, but I had a lot of stuff to say, and this podcast is going to be long, but it's really going to be very, very informative for all of you in the architecture and architectural visualization community. Thanks a lot, guys.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the chaos group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're going to fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, You need to make sure everything has Fernell.
All right. So this session's a little bit different than most. This is more of a conversation with people in the industry. You know, you're free to ask questions. We'll kind of take a few breaks so you can ask questions as we go. But what I'm going to be doing is asking a number of questions around business, the creative side, and kind of the future of the architectural visualization industry. Some people just answer one question. Some, you know, maybe some of the questions will kind of go around the whole table, but it's really informal. This is not, you know, the UN Congress, although it kind of looks that way. It's really informal. So if you guys, you know, want to ask a question, just put your hands up and we'll go to you, and you'll have the opportunity to ask questions to any one of these guys on the board. So the first question, and this came out of last year's 3D symposium near one of the end of the talks that was done. The question was asked, how much do you charge? And I think that's probably a less productive question than how do you come about at the rates that you charge? I think that's the more important question, because obviously rates are very based on your client, based on where you live in the world. So I think the question is, how do you figure out what that price should be? And Patricio, you run a big firm, so I'll pass it off to you first.
Well, I'm going to start with a difficult question. Well, we charge it depending on the scope of work. Let me ask you something, because this is a question that I have, okay? How many of you, please raise your hand, the people who speak English? Half and half? And Spanish? Okay.
You too.
Okay, so I'm going to stay in English. Well, depending on the scope of work, basically, there's a couple of things. So first of all, we don't have a pricing list. We don't charge 2,500 or 5,000. The point is that depending on the time frame that we have and how much information do we receive is based on how we are going to charge. Depending on the situation, our fees can be from a very efficient in terms of cost from 2,000, and it can rise up to 4,500. Depending, in some cases, it's going to be in that range. If the client come to us and ask for something that must be done tomorrow, we are going to charge a rush fee in that case. So basically, there's a range of 3,000 in that range, basically. Yeah.
So when you determine kind of what you're going to charge, though, I mean, obviously, you must look at the overhead of your... so let me move this mic here. You must look at the overhead that you have to cost. Every employee costs a certain amount of money.
Correct.
You have rent. You have bills that have to be paid. I mean, do you work backwards from those fees, or do you just sort of know roughly?
Yes, absolutely. We do some math, basically, and we always check that math. So we estimated our cost deeply, so we know exactly what are the real cost, not the cost that is per employee, okay? Because technically, several people used to think, okay, how much do I pay for this guy? Okay, what is the payroll that this guy? What are the overhead costs? And based on that, I estimate the numbers. There's much more behind the scene. So yes, we know exactly how much it costs per person, and that is why we track in advance. So in the way that we quote always is that, okay, this is something that must be done within, I don't know. We in our office, we quote it as half day. So one person is two units, basically. Per day. So based on this, we estimate, I don't know, 16 units. So it's mean 8 days per one single person, okay? And we apply for that the amount, and we track. So if we can do it sooner, and this is based on the experience, when we estimate the numbers, we do it based on that. So that is in the way that we keep always a track of the profit.
Yeah, so that was really the main point of that question, was to kind of have you thinking about not just asking somebody, you know, how much do you charge and I should charge the same because I'm in the same country, but to actually look at what are your costs? You know, certainly you have to take into account, you know, what the industry is charging. But I think at the same time, you need to look at the hard costs and kind of the business side of those things to come up with those fees. I'm curious, the other side of the tape.
Sorry, just to, I want to clarify something else, because for us it's quite different also, the format. For example, if someone is asking for a bathroom, it's not like a bird eye view with a whole master plan, okay?
Of course.
So, of course, we are not going to charge $100 for that.
Curious, others at the table, I mean, when you come up with your fees, I mean, do you work a similar model, I guess?
This must be for me. very much so. I mean, I myself am still learning. So, you know, I wasn't born into business, so I've had to learn the hard way. So I've had to do the bad way, where you charge less, you do more, to start off, because I started this from zero. And at a certain point, what Patricio was saying is kind of the natural evolution of where we're going as well, where I had to look into how can we charge accordingly to what we do? Because I was doing it all based on experience. So I would have a rough number in my head. I would know how many hours, how many people, the overheads, and when they needed, what they needed. And I would kind of somehow just write on a paper, much like I do here, and I still do it. You'll see a lot of numbers here. And that's kind of how I used to reach the cost. These days, it's much more written out. So I'll write down, more or less, based on experience, how many people, the overheads, more or less a profit margin that we need to be sustainable on a job, and the time and the type of image. Of course, there are always clients you can push a little more, others you can push a little less. If the job is really, we really love art, and if the job is something we love and we really like the client, we'll charge less. It's just if they come to us and say, hey, we can't do it for that, we'll find a way to do it. Just because we love what we do, and in a certain way, it is a business at the end of the day, so we also have the reverse. If they keep pushing us with revisions, we'll just tell them, hey, no, finished, you pay more, we do more. If you don't, we don't go further. And I guess this is more or less the model that we probably haven't reached to Patricio and RX level, but I think this is somewhat of the model that we're reaching, kind of calculating these costs, trying to get people into units, and working this out with timesheets. Which is kind of the next level we're also going to, and kind of having graphs that we can understand exactly how it all functions. So
as a follow-up question, this is for anybody on the panel. So that you don't become a commodity, how do you sell yourselves, not based on price, but based on the caliber of work you do and, you know, the style that you do?
I do training, don't look at me.
No, Patricio, you want to take this?
No, there's another thing.
I answered the hard question, so.
It's your turn. It's one side, it's second side.
I think that it's always difficult, because this is not a commodity at all. So, in fact, there's no project that is something that you can repeat on the next one. You can have certain guidelines that then you can use, basically, but there's no project that is equal to other. So in our case, it's part of my responsibility in ARX. I do the numbers, I track always, I go back and forth, and we have a program that we develop in-house. In that case, we put a timeline. So each person who is actually working is in a big chart. So it's a dynamic table. And it's showing up how profitable is each project.
But how do you
in real time?
But obviously your clients, I'm presuming you guys are well established enough that your clients aren't coming to you and saying, you know, we want to use you because we know you charge X. I mean, they're coming to you because they know that you have you can offer something. So how do you develop your company from, say, a freelancer and not build it based on how much you charge and based on the service you provide?
Well, I think that first of all, we try to say to our clients that we are not a rendering company. That is the first thing. Why someone is coming to ARX and will pay X amount of money in comparison with some other options that everyone has that can pay it to an indie company, a bunch of hundreds, basically. Well, I think that is the service. Is an experience, basically. Is the experience of having in one single place a full solution. They are coming to us looking for a solution that is not only the rendering. The rendering is going to be the output, but it's the service, it's the experience, having repetitive clients, bringing on board and paying attention what are they asking us to us. In some cases, the approach is wrong from our understanding, and we said, well, I think that you should go into this direction, or probably in some cases the client came to us and said, well, technically we don't have anything, but we know that in 10 days we need to present this, I need it, and I don't have more than this and this and this. Can you help us? Well, in that case, we provide design, we provide solutions, we provide advice. I think that you should have in this format that we can propose. What is your architect? In some cases, let me tell you a funny story. I'm not going to say the client because I'm going to be in trouble. But in some cases, they came to us and said, well, we need to start the sales process right now. The cash flow is compromised and we need to start. But the problem is that the designers are going to come with the design in 3 months. And I can wait 3 months, or I need to start the marketing tomorrow, yesterday. So I said, well, but the problem here is the designer was a very well-known designer. So he said, well, can you design in his style, okay, and bring me something in his style? Well, we did it. We provided the solution. And the funny part is that 3 months after, they received the project from this very well-known designer, and he didn't like it. So they sent the designer the renderings that it was designed in his style to adopt that design. So anyway, situations like this is always the daily basis. And when you count at the end, how much is it cost the rendering, if you had the chance to sell a couple of units in advance, well, technically it's not important.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, I just have a follow-up question, if that's okay, Jeff.
Yeah.
I'm trying to, because I worked in visual effects for a while, and it's extremely competitive. So the profit margins in visual effects are like 1% or 2%, and I'm not kidding. So very, very, very competitive. And so therefore, people try to constantly they have to get the work, or they close the company, they go bankrupt. So basically, the question is, how competitive is it out there? And are they going to demand the highest quality no matter what the cost, because then they'll just go somewhere else? Do you feel that situation as well, or do you feel that the people do actually look at quality and pay for quality?
Again.
But you guys can take it. You can take it.
Well.
So we'll...
Tiago Lima.
No one wants to answer that question.
No, I'm going to take that. Okay. I think that first of all, there's different kinds of clients with different skills and different QIs, basically. Okay, some other.
I like that.
Okay,
that's not very.
We call it CI, client interface.
Okay, so I think that some clients they don't ask us. I need to have, I don't know, more sample points. Okay, in that image, because the shadow doesn't look realistic. This is not the request that we have. We have situations like the client said, I need to have this done properly. And what is properly is not only quality, is what is the best quality in the time frame that we have with these restrictions of cost and these resources. To find the correct equation to balance the equation is the best solution. But it's not necessarily mean that from the technical point of view is the best of the best. I think that
so it's a perfect segue into the go ahead, Pedro.
We worked. I worked at quite a well-known studio, and they had this division of imagery by quality. So the quicker ones, they had this whole setup. The quicker ones would be more and cheaper. They have the medium ones, and then they have marketing, and they price accordingly. And basically, what clients in the majority would do, at least architects, we're talking about architects in the majority, what they would do is they would always ask for the quicker one, revise it till it got to the quicker cheaper till it got to be expensive. And they said, I'd never understood how this system worked for them, because they would quote it and revise it to be a quick cheaper one, but the client would put in so many revisions and really demand the quality that it ended up being almost a medium one. So,
but did they pay for that in the end?
I wasn't running the business, but I think in the end it was hit and miss on getting payments for that and not getting. I mean, they had to really negotiate it. So, yeah, I mean, taking into consideration what's being said, it's. I mean, we also get a lot of what Patricio was saying. So they'll come to you and they'll say, "Here's a reference." Thomas.
So they want you to match Thomas, right?
Or Mid, and they'll say, "Hey, we want this, and can you do this?" And it's a bit of that. This plays up on other things like originality, all the artistic questions. So, I mean, every person, every company is individual. We have an artistic approach in our own way. And it's kind of, they're always going to do this, but when they do come to us and say that, we always say, you know, if you want to work with people and you want this to be produced, you should work with them. That's the best way to go about it. So I've probably gotten lost and off track here.
No, that's good. I mean, very similar things happen in visual effects, but much more direct, right? So as an example, there's a big job, some big movie probably done by some superhero movie, let's just put it that way. And they'll give a test out to five different studios, right? And they'll get five different levels of quality and five different prices. So they'll find the one with the cheapest price and they say, "You won the project, as long as you make it look like the top one."
Yeah.
So basically, you are the cheapest one. You cost nothing, but you have to make it look like the one that costs seven times more.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I would like to say something, because in our company, at a certain point, we switch from what we started at the beginning. This is part of what is going to be my speech. But the fact is that at certain points, we used to be the guys who used to call at the very end, okay, when everything was on fire, and let's call it your ex, basically, okay? Everything is on fire. We call D-Box and they call us 6 months, I don't know. Some ridiculous time frame that it wasn't appropriate for them. So in some cases, we used to have situations that we tried to help the client and we burn out basically in order to help the clients. But the problem is that at the end, let's say that in fact, I had a very bad situation with a client who asked us to have something. He called us on a Thursday and he requested 12 renderings for marketing by Monday 8 a.m. So we spent a lot of time working during the weekend with several back and forth. So it was a very stressing process for everyone. But at the end, we resolved the problem. We delivered some really good renderings based on the time frame. But, and this is the key issue, but at the end, one day, they forgot how many days they gave us to produce that. And one day they said, "Well, Patricio, what you produced, it was good, but I had this guy who produced this rendering." And suddenly that guy had a month. So the comparison wasn't fair for us. And we were in a situation that we were dealing with situations like that and said, "Well, hold on. Do you remember that you gave me 3 days for this? I think that what we produce, in fact, the perception of what is good and what is not good can change touching one single of the parameters. If I show you the ugliest rendering that you have in mind. Keep in mind that. And I said, I produce that rendering in 1 minute. It look amazing suddenly. And when you get the best rendering that you have in mind and said, I spent 10 years for this, suddenly it doesn't look so amazing. So quality is always attached with certain other parameters. That is why when you ask me, how much is it cost? Well, in some cases, do we charge in some cases $800? Yes, in some cases we charge $800. And in some cases we charge $7,000. Well, it's depending on so many parameters. So that is why we don't have a pricing list, and we try to be very precautious with our clients when we speak about quality, basically.
It's actually really insightful. Well, it's really insightful. It kind of ties into a next question here, where I think as artists, everybody wants to produce the best quality image they can, but yet at the same time, you have to earn a living, so you can't spend 10 years on the image, of course. So how do you draw that line where you decide that, okay, I'm done. I'm not happy with it, but I'm going to be done because I need to move on. I mean, even Tiago, how do you arrive at that?
Well, I am not working for clients for some time.
You're retired.
I'm retired. I'm old. I'm quite old. So, but well, I used to say that I never finish a render. I just give up in the quality that I think is good. Okay, but. For clients, I suffered a lot. I think the longer deadline I had in my life was 3 days. Longer. They, as Patricia said, they just call me when everything is on fire or when everyone is gonna get in vacations. So, Tiago is not getting Tiago. Vacation. Maybe he can work.
Is the Chinese New Year?
Yeah. Exactly. So that's an important point. It's an important point. You when you're working for a lot of clients and for some time, the clients start to see you as a pattern. So you can't do this for long. You can't accept this kind of situation, this kind of workflow and deadlines. So they always remember you. Oh, the guy Tiago can solve this problem. So you ever get the worst jobs, and you get frustrated and start to give up the work, the profession,
and retire.
And retire as I did. No, I'm just focusing my training and it's not just about clients.
So for Tomas at Mir, how do you guys decide when an image becomes finished?
Well, honestly, I never give up. And sometimes that's the challenge if you have a shitty project and your job is to make something good out of it, even if it's bad. We are working with fixed deadlines. We have 5 days for an image. And that's your time. You have to finish and you have to make the best out of it. So, yeah. Okay. Of course, sometimes we have to work overtime or there are some delays, but then they have to pay extra and the contract said. And yeah, I'm not sure that I answered for your question.
So maybe we'll change directions a little bit here and talk a little bit more about the creative process here. A question for Nikos. How do you, this is kind of leading right into a creative lighting talk here, but okay. How do you approach your creative process, Nikos?
Yeah, that's a good question. Actually, it's very simple because I'm inspired by life. So for me, as I said in my presentation, given that everything we see is brought by light, for me, lighting is everything. So what I'm trying every day is to look around me for inspiration. And if we talk about projects, I mean, we're doing training, but if we talk about projects, when I start something, I start with the message and the mood boards. I think my process is to always think the message. And if I can use any tools to make it happen, I'm up for that, And that's why I'm watching a lot of films. I think it's important to either read books, let's say, and take risks. That's part of life. So yeah, my creative process is to look around me, collaborate with my colleagues, and do the best, you know, start with a good start, with a message, and try to deliver on time, but sometimes it's impossible. But, you know, Tama said you never give up. So when I was doing production, I was doing the same thing, never give up, always focusing on the best. And these days, I read a lot of books because it's part of my creative process. And, you know, just do your best and chase beauty in all things. That's it.
Anyone else want to grab that?
I try to rebrand English, but after the class is in Spanish. And no, about the creative process. This is my idea from many years ago when I started in university. I studied design and I studied especially process design. So how to structure a process to get a result. So my idea from many years is how can I think that the final image of my render is the final result of a process, is not some that happens randomly. It's a final result of a process. And this is what I started from this idea to structure my method, this 5SW method. And well, more details in the class we are going to start after this panel. And I think that the best part of the idea of to have a process to create a final result is this replicability. How do you say this?
Replicabilidad.
that you can reproduce a good result many times. It's not some that happen casually for this render, but you have some more abstract in your mind that you can reproduce in other situation, maybe different, but that you have the ability to adapt your knowledge in different situations. This is the best part of working with a method or with a structure. The best part to structure the creative process, I think this is.
Yeah, structure.
Okay. So maybe when this next question, I'll kind of run around the table here. Most of you, at least, if you don't now, have in the past worked creatively. So what is the, and keep it relatively short, what is the most important element you think in achieving a really successful image or film?
I think my presentation was focused on that, is the keep an eye on everything, is observation and references. That's it.
Yes, definitely references for me also. And one more thing, just to add a detail, many times, many users, at least I talk thinking my students, think that the observation is one part, the observation of the real world is the first part, but it's the other part, that is the observation of how to capture the world with a lens. This is the second part. It's not just how the material is in the real world, for example, but it's how you take a shoot of a material, so how the material is through a photography. This is the second part.
I would like to say this.
Yeah. For me, I agree that reference is like the most important thing while you're making an animation or image, whatever. But I think most important is the idea itself, because without the idea, for example, the animation you do, which could be stunning, the result could be awesome, but without the idea or something that catches the attention of the people who watch it, the project just will not have much sense. It will be like a good technical project finished and delivered to client, or in case if it's a personal project. But it needs to have something that catches your attention. And
I have one more thing. I think to end up with a good result is just to convince the client, actually. I think that's one of the most difficult thing. And if you can convince him, I think you can end up a better image. Because usually they always want, we are better artists. And yeah, we know what is good. And I think they usually don't know. So just communication, and try to convince them. And that's one of the This is not a technical, not technical thing, but it's quite important, I think. Communication.
Yeah. This question, I think, it's a funny one because it kind of, I was asking what was the question to them. I heard it the first time, but I was trying to decipher in my mind what the question was, and I kind of found that it's almost, you know, what's the key to being successful at an image or being successful in its root? And I think the key to being successful or creating something really good is in practice. Nothing comes, I mean, all the images we make, everyone, they start off, no one renders something amazing and it's amazing straight away. They have to be modeled, they have to go through iterations, and it's, I think in the end, it's very much down to practice with everything. You know, understanding your tools, understanding your creative process, and all this will kind of remain in the back of your mind, and that all comes together and links with your references and things like that. It's just like anything, sport or something. You have to practice to really be able to create something good, be ever what it is. I think that's the key, I think.
Yeah, actually, I totally agree with references and everything. I think for me is also important to, let's say, find your own perspective and the photographic approach. Don't see it as a render because it's more than that. You have a camera with real parameters, so think it that way and try to work with references about lighting, about materials, and try to have a voice, you know, your own way of seeing. That's why we're all here, to develop skills and techniques. And the photographic approach is definitely helping me to make beautiful images, because if you think as a photographer and use the camera, is these numbers that can help you to bring more light. I saw before Thiago Lima, he was using exposure to bring light. Yes, of course, it's a camera. So think as a photographer is very important, and his techniques is inspiring.
Can I add just one more question? It's kind of a question for the other guys. How much you add in your scenes, your final renders, more than the client asks? For example, because we're actually working with, well, not so good prices, not so good money, and how much you try to make it something more than he wants? In these days, I mean.
Tell the story.
Which one?
Nothing more.
To give him something better.
Oh, yeah, I have a good story.
Tell the story. Tell the story.
So, I give you two stories, very quick. First one, we created something, and last year I presented this. We created, sent to the client for final sign-off, and he said, yeah, great, fantastic, we love it. And we thought, why? Wait a minute. Now, this was a few years ago, right when I started. I say we, it was me. And I sent to the client, it's fantastic. And then I created another version, and that was like the built more dirt, more kind of realistic, more feeling into it. And he said, oh, no, we don't like it. Please don't publish anything online. Do not mention our name. Do not say anything. We don't like it. We don't want anything. And I think now, and this is a little industry secret, I think this goes, I'm not sure, but at least from my perspective, what I've seen, this is what goes on in reality, which is you try and create always the best for the client. And then the client, sometimes you won't have time or you have some other constraints. You've tried your best. Mm-hmm. But then if you really like the project, you even do more, yeah, and you go for it, and you produce. And so 90% of what we see online, I believe, I don't know if it's like that everywhere, is just my experience. 90% of what I see online is a refined version of the client's version. Mm-hmm. There are some, with us is like that, I can't speak for everyone, but there are some studios that nail it straight away, I'm sure. But with us, we always give a little extra, put a person, color grade it in a different way. They'll want a happy sky, we'll change the sky around. We'll build first our version, yeah, give to the client. They hate it, we very quickly transform to their version, and then we pick up the old version and go with that one. So I think that's the way that we look at it, at least.
I would like to say something that I was thinking the previous question, and is connected with what Thiago asked. And From my perspective, there's two different scenarios for that. The first is that because all of us are actually living based on this industry, and this industry means that there's someone else who is paying for us. Okay, someone is paying you to research or you to do your stuff, and me as a vendor. So everybody is actually having a purpose. So saying that, I think that for the ones who are actually providing a service, what is the final quality, or what is the, in my case, is the outcome from the client? What is the result, basically? Because someone who hired us came to us for some specific request, and how good we satisfy that request is one of the things. And how we will know is easy. Are we going to have a repetitive client or not? If they came to us once and they did and disappear, it wasn't our client. We did something wrong, no matter how good it was, the image. Because we are actually providing a service here, and because we are providing a service for someone else, that someone else at the very end is going to be the one who is going to judge how good we satisfied that request. And I think that that is the outcome. I track how many clients do we have, repetitive clients. And that is, and we and for some reason we have someone who came to us and didn't came back again. In some cases we ask, what was the problem? Why we fail it? Because for some reason something we didn't. So the experience is at the very end. I used to think myself that, like, how many of you, raise your hands, has a GPS in your car? No, a GPS. True, install a GPS in your car.
Well, you have a car.
Okay. Do you use your GPS? What do you use?
My phone.
Your Google Maps.
I don't have a car.
Okay. So, think in this way. You have a device that it was created for that specific purpose. There are some satellites, hardware. There's an interface that it was installed in the correct location of your car. Okay, there's a software who interact and all these moving parts. So basically you have all these three dimensions together, but for some reason you choose another device. Why? Because basically when you try to roll the spin the wheel and that kind of thing, suddenly the street didn't show up, or the number, it was obsolete, or this street wasn't created by the day that they put the, so it's not updated. Anyway, at the end is the experience from the user, the ones who is going to judge how good it is. That is why I use Google Maps. Do you use Google Maps or you use your GPS? So here we are, three guys who has GPS in his car and actually using Google Maps. Because the outcome is Google Maps is better for me. It's showing me traffic in real time. It's showing me, and suddenly turn left and you are going to earn 2 minutes faster than the other one. That kind of things that at the end is showing me and keeping me as a client for Google Maps than the BMW or the whatever is the car that you have, GPS.
I actually have a story that's very much related to what you have to say, and I know it's from a different industry, but it's really important. I think a lot of you guys gave some great answers about what your creative process is in terms of reference, et cetera. But for me, my favorite part of the creative process is bidding with a client. And the reason that is, and I'm actually very serious about this, the reason that is you start with a bid and they say, we want this, you know, this is in visual effects as an example, we want this crazy commercial, but we have like $200 or something like that, you know, whatever, I'm just exaggerating. But they want a lot for very little money, right? So my company will say, try to see how low you can make it. So I'll say, no, I'm going to tell you how much it's going to take to make that. So I'm going to give them the price of that, and they'll try to discount as much as they want, and they'll say, okay, now they'll say it's too expensive. I said, okay, before we say we can't do it, or before we say whatever, let me get on the phone with the director. So I called the director. I've never met the director, but I called the director. I said, I'm bidding on this process. I'd like to know what your intent is. So I actually start to ask the person, what are you trying to do? Now, all of a sudden, I'm having a creative conversation with a director before the process has even started. I don't even have the job yet. I'm already starting a relationship with the director, which is the most important part, because a good project is only going to be based on my work and the director's work together. Now I've started a relationship, and often, very often, I win the job at a higher price than they asked, because they've already trusted me. And then I get a repeat client. Now this person calls me all the time. So that's the thing. Talk to the client. Know your relationship with the client. That's the most important part, I think, of the whole process.
Yeah. On a follow-up on that, I'm curious how many people were approached by a client and they came to you with a certain budget, but after your conversation, you ended up actually increasing that budget. Nobody?
Nobody.
So apparently nobody makes more money. Okay.
I'll respond to that. So you're saying basically they give you an initial budget, you budget it up.
Yeah, or you know, as Chris was saying, you based on that additional conversation you have with them, you're able to sell them an idea that they didn't think they had, and maybe
I think what Chris said was a great strategy. And we tried that all the time, which I was saying, yes, 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 because the first thing we try and do is build a kind of a relationship to understand what they want. And that kind of, it convinces them to go forward. We had an opposite case of that. Unfortunately, we can't beat up many times. We either reject or it gets to a point, or we lose an image or add an image. It varies. But we had the opposite happen, which was we had a client and we did a job for them at a stipulated price. And they came for another job and sent us another firm's work as a reference. I think it was Luxigon this time. You're okay. and we quoted, and it was very similar to the first job because the scope of work was similar. And then they came back with half the price of what we initially. And I said, but guys, what happened here? The first ones we did, you're super happy, and now you're saying it's a competition and it's half the price, but the work for us is the same. I said, how does that work? And he said, oh, the director doesn't want to pay too much. This is what we have. And I said, look, I really like this. Let's look at what we can do within it. Had talks, created a relationship. And then at the end of the day, we negotiated it. And I said, okay, we can drop to this much to make it sustainable because we really like the project. We find it's fantastic. But they actually didn't go with us. They said, we can't do that. We're going half our price. There's a guy who will do half what you do. And then I asked, is he a freelancer? Does he have people working with him? Where is he based in the world? What's he competing on? You can't tell me he's charging half and doing this. So I think this was the opposite of what you said. But we've had the opportunity. I mean, we don't go to many meetings in person, but one client is that we have, I go to the meetings all the time, and he explains the project. He's like a creative type, and it's bricks, and it's boring, and don't put that on the internet. But it's boring stuff. But he explains it, and he makes it this amazing thing, and he makes it great for us. And then we start negotiating. Let's do another image. This image is good. That is bad. Let's reduce that. And we actually take off images for him. We say, no, that's not worth it. That's not good. And then we look at another one, and he'll add it. So it's a bit give and take, I think, on our side.
It's hard to talk about my experience because I got lucky with my clients. I think they were most organized with the whole process, especially in the briefing process. And I kind of a bad guy for clients in the briefing process. I don't care if I'm gonna lose the client. I really push hard everything I need to say to him. Oh no, I want it this way. No, you don't want this way. It's this way. So I fight with him before he start the job. So I don't have any problems later if the works is how to say
What?
Si continuo, si confirma.
What's going on? No, it's confirmed.
When you have it's confirmed, yeah, if the work is confirmed. But in Brazil, happens, I don't know how it is in the other countries, but in Brazil, the experience, at least for my students, is that the client don't have the complete project when he asks you to do the job. So they say, oh, just start to building the roof, then later I'll send you the whole house. So it's like that. How are you going to charge for it? So most part of people, especially who's starting in this field, don't know how to react to this situation. So they start a job, later, now I have more two houses in this scene, I need to add more money. And most part of people don't have the courage to add money because they got afraid to lose the client. I think it is a different situation. But in Brazil, it's really common. You're in the middle of the project and you need to increase the budget. It happens a lot of time, and the clients are so has no organization, has no briefing, and the professionals start in the area, most part downloading pirate programs and piracy models, so they don't know how to modeling, don't know how to how to charge for the image because they don't have any charge with original softwares and stuff like that. So the prices are really crazy. You should make a how you say the
price chart.
The price chart. Yeah, about Brazil, it's crazy. It will be crazy. You see.
I think that, for example, our market is US basically, and in US it's like any other market. Always clients try to pay less.
Ah, sure, sure.
So, unfortunately, it's not a Brazilian exclusivity. But in our case, what we used to do is that sometimes we get more in terms of income than what we originally quoted. And how we do that? Well, first of all, we try to listen what the client is asking us. Basically, we try to read not only what they are actually saying us, also what they are trying to truly say. And this is different because when a developer came to us and said, okay, I need 10 images, okay, and I need it in 10 days, does it mean that he really needs 10 images in 10 days? No. He is requesting us that I need to put something for marketing purpose in 10 days, and I'm asking you 10 just in order to get a quote. But if you can provide that guy 16 good images, does it mean that he's not going to pay? Well, what we discover in some cases is that we developed more images that they requested us, and at the end, suddenly, when we put the watermark on that, okay, because in some cases we do some different angles that is not costing us a lot of money, okay, because it's something that a change of the mood. Yeah. And suddenly we present it, and in some cases also we present it as different images for different moods, and said, I like it. No, but you confirm for 10. Okay, yes, but I wanted this. 4 and 5 images, and suddenly we sold 15 images for a project that it was quoted for 10.
I have a question for Patricio. Do they try and negotiate it and say, "Now you've already got these assets, can you do this cheaper?" And how do you take this on board when they do try and negotiate these? Because I'm sure
It happened to us. In some cases, at the beginning we didn't put, for example, the watermark. The logo on the images. And one day it was funny because we have a client who discharged one of our images that it was in the early part of the process. And suddenly we saw in New York Times the rendering that it was discharged and they didn't pay for that.
Oh.
Okay? It was part of one of the images that it was discharged and said, hey, are you kidding? Why? No, because the senior guy decided that this image was the best one. That it was the one that we recommended that the interior designer discharged, blah, 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 blah. So we went back and said, well, sorry, but we need to pay for this because you pay for the others. It's very common for us when the situations like that, Okay, but should I need to pay full price for this image? Yes, you should. You should. Or you are going to be in trouble. We are not the company who sue people, okay?
Yeah, so yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's some other who are really professional suing people. We don't. But we go and we try to be the good guys, the nice guys, and we get, well, I think that we really deserve. So pay us this and
yeah. Yeah.
So Aldo wants to take a quick 5-minute break so everybody can grab a quick refreshment at the back, and then we'll carry on again in, I guess, about five minutes. Yeah, so.
Aldo wants to drink something.
5 minutes only. I mean, you don't have to go out. You can stay here.
Okay. Just to get
so while before as you're going on your break, think about a few questions, because my first question when we come back is going to be to you.
I think that is for me it's very interesting to have all these people here with different profiles. So I think that for me it's super exciting. Of course, with some beers will be better, but we don't have beers here, so we can try to imagine what kind of question we have. I mean, look, the team for me it's amazing. So you can create some question in your head.
Push
him.
No. Okay, so part two. Now it's your turn. So we're all going to sit up here in silence until somebody asks a question. Who's first?
It's going to take forever.
Crickets.
Aldo, you make the question.
It's very difficult to ask a serious question now.
Yes. I couldn't hear you with the hat on. Sorry. What was that?
For those of you who are going to be listening to Chris's podcast here, we're all wearing toques, as we call them in Canada, so our ears are covered and we can't hear anything.
What's a toque?
Yeah.
Wait for the microphone.
Hello, my name is Alex. And more than a question, it's more like a suggestion, especially for you, Jeff, that you're like so well connected with everybody and you know about this business a lot. Do you think there is a way like to standardize prices? I mean, like fix like the lowest rate that we can charge for? Because what's been happening, I've been around for 21 years in this business, and I've seen it like for the ones that dedicate our lives and our passion are and everything to this business. Each day or each year, I work more, I charge less because of the competition. So what we're doing right now, it's like giving us, we're shooting our own foot, really, with this all this competition. Do you think there's a way, or can you do something about this, like fix the lowest rate that we can charge for?
I mean, this year has been 20 years in the industry for myself as well. From a legal standpoint, I mean, technically it's called price fixing and it's illegal. So, I mean, you could not within an industry all get together and decide that, you know, we can only charge this much. Most countries, you would not be able to do that. I think probably where it becomes important is to educate the industry itself about how do you come up with pricing. And this kind of led back to the first question I had is, you know, don't ask the question how much should I charge or how little should I charge, is how do I come up with that pricing? Everybody has the same fixed cost. I mean, obviously it's a world economy, so we're going to have people in different countries who have different overheads. They pay their staff less, their overheads might be less, therefore they can charge less for the same amount of work. But I think the important question is how do you come to that number based upon all those variables of staff and overhead and you know, time spent and those sorts of things. So I think, you know, from that perspective, I think the only thing we can do in the industry is to try to educate people. And certainly that's been my intent with trying to push out some of the salary surveys and industry surveys, is to bring some awareness to where we're at now. And I guess from that point, we kind of continue the conversation about how should we be charging, you know, and not what should we be charging, but how should we be charging.
I would like to add something on what Jeff said, and I think that the question is tricky, because of course it's always linked with the client that you have. If you have one guy who is actually asking you for bathroom or toilet remodelation, okay, you won't be able to charge $5,000, okay, or are not going to go for, I don't know, mirror, okay, for that rendering. So you should have always connection between what is the service that you provide and the kind of client that you work. Okay, there's of course competition, but as Jeff said, if you try to sell in the UK prices in India, you won't be able to get any account. Okay, for example, just to say something. So, what is reasonable and what is not fair if you isolate the number without context. In New York is one thing, in Montana is another, for just to say something, in US. Okay, Florida is another, Colorado, LA is different. So each, not only one country, there's also different regions and different clients. If you are charging for Silverstein, the owner of the Ground Zero, okay, what is realistic for you to get that client? Well, that client is the client that is looking everyone. Okay, so that's, of course, for that client to pay, I don't know, X amount of money is you're a bargain, okay? Because they will pay more in toilets than what are they going to spend in renderings, probably. So, of course, it's always related to what is the kind of client that you have.
I think, too, it's a fine line, but there's a perceived value. If you come into the market with, say, a North American client and you say, yeah, I can do a rendering for $50. Maybe it is a really good rendering, but I think there's, you know, it's human nature to think, well, $50 for a rendering, I mean, that seems kind of cheap. Probably it isn't a good product, right? I mean, perfect example, years and years ago, a family member had passed and their estate was on sale, and my parents were selling off just garbage bags full of stuff, just trying to get rid of it. And they had these bags at like $5 or $2. Nobody would buy them. They were trying to get rid of everything, so they just put $20 on it. They all sold. So I think there is a human nature where there's a perceived value. So, you know, where that line exists, I mean, I don't know exactly, but I think pricing too low, I think that line where some of the countries where they charge really low rates in our industry, I think could be a lot higher, not because for any other reason that I just think they can. I think people are willing to pay for a product that, you know, without paying $50 or $100. I think, you know, maybe that line's $500, I mean, whatever the number is. So,
yeah,
I just would like to say something.
You see now with a hat.
So at Mir we have fixed prices, and I think if you have fixed prices, you can avoid lots of problems. And I think an image costs around €4,000, and some projects. So sometimes the client are paying €4,000 for a master plan. But I remember 2 years ago, a Norwegian client literally paid €4,000 for a toilet render. Actually, it was a good toilet render, but still, it's just a toilet render. So some people can pay lots of money for a really small project.
I mean, why does anybody buy a Rolex, right? I mean, you go buy a Timex for $25, but why would you spend $10,000 or $20,000 for a watch? Because of the brand, the association of it. I mean, it's the same reason. You know, a lot of the companies, successful companies in our industry are able to command those rates. A, they deliver a really solid product, and don't get me wrong, but, you know, there's a cachet that they've built. These are all marketing companies. I mean, if you're good at what you do, you market yourself equally as well as you create the images for others. So.
But the problem is not the cost. The problem is the niche.
Yeah.
The
niche.
Niche.
But do people really go say, check out this render, it's a mirror? I mean, mm-hmm. Really? They do?
Yeah.
So there you go. So your brand means something, right? Yeah. Your brand means quality. Your brand means what it is.
Yeah.
And actually, I'm not sure if I can explain this in English, like in Spanish, but I want to try to get all the guys. Maybe 2 years ago, I created a group called Como Cobrar Un Render on Facebook, actually. Yes. And I talked with Jeff about, because it was like my dream, create this kind of parameters for rendering, you know, but it's impossible. It's impossible because, for example, in Mexico, you have the freelance that is a really, really, really good guy that can, with $500, he is happy, you know. And you have a company, and you have original license, for example. This guy knows. You have a computer of $2,000, and this guy have maybe the same computer actually, but he don't pay for the light. He lives with his parents, and it's okay. So it's very difficult try to create these kind of parameters. I noticed that even probably could be something in a region. In the world, it's impossible. As Patricio say, it's too much different even in Mexico, from Mexico City, Guadalajara, and Monterrey are the three states more strong, you know, and Mexico City is more. The projects are different, the people have maybe more money, I don't know. But in Toluca, for example, where I come, it's impossible. I remember some renderings people pay me for around like $600, $700 in Mexico City. In Toluca, that's impossible for sure. Maybe $100 is like a wow, you know? So that's the reason because I decide don't work with the market in Mexico. But actually, it's very, very, very hard. Maybe we can try to make it. You have this like rates in general around the world, but it's not like the same in India, the same in New York, the same in Mexico, even in the same country is different. So to be honest, I have this dream some time ago, but now it's like, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe yeah. we can try to educate young people, because as I say, when I made my workshops in Mexico, I always try to say this, okay, now it's okay. You have your clients and they are paying you $500. No, $500, no, $50. $50 for each render. And you are happy now, but wait 5 years, when you have a family, you have to pay for a rent, you have to pay for license, you have to pay for computers, then $50 is nothing, you know? So I try to create this in the young people. You have to, if you are good in something, even if you are a student, but you have the level of a big studio, you have to request the payment for that level. It's not like, okay, I'm a student, with $50 I'm happy. No, we have to create this in the, okay.
This is the third time I've...
I would like to add a little observation about this. It's just an observation. We are talking about that probably $5,000 for an image could be enough for a kitchen, for example. But think that 20 years ago, to have the same image, to have the same final result, you have to build a set, so build a kitchen. You have to call a photographer. And this cost around $15,000, maybe 10 years ago, 20 years ago, before renders, I mean. So under a certain point of view, $5,000 could look enough. But under this other point of view, the market 20 years ago, to make a real picture, but to produce the same final result was much more. It's just an observation to have a reference. The things changed a lot, but...
Yeah, and also you have the client who has his own opinion of what
sure.
is his cost.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, I have one client that it was the largest airport company in South America. Okay, we were doing a lot of airports all over the world for that company. Of course, it was a big client for us. And one day he said, I had the meeting with the director. I used to have very frequent meetings with him, and said, well, Patricio, this is the point. I don't know how much, what is the real cost of ARX? And I don't know, because the only way that I can compare if a quote that you gave me is good or not is comparing you with your own old proposals. And said, why are you doing that? Because I would like to know how much do you charge per rendering. And I said, well, this is the point, Marcelo. In some cases, okay, and this came for an airport who hired a very good company interior designer that it was very favorish, okay, with a lot of things. And I said, well, it's like if you are going to do a rendering for Frank Lloyd Wright, will you charge the same for Frank Gehry or Zaha Hadid with the most complex geometry? Well, technically, it's not going to take for you the same time, and it's the same building with the same size. And the guy, clients, used to think, okay, this is the same size of the previous one, because they basically can understand how difficult and how different it is for you to produce what they are asking you. One thing is that if I ask you to do something in modern style, okay, with stock furniture from Evermotion, will you charge the same for custom furniture, Louis XVI? Well, both are going to be rooms, but for you it's not going to be the same thing. Well, why in one case you will charge more for the other one is perfectly logical. In one case you will need to put an entire army in order to produce the custom furniture only, and in the other one it's going to be okay, this one, that's it.
Any more questions from the audience before we move on? We gotta have one more. Wait for Aldo to bring the mic.
Hi.
See?
I know that we are all connected here on Facebook, and I know that we are friends on Facebook, and we are following our jobs and all this stuff. How do you guys see our work from another countries? How do you criticize Mexican work, and how do you see if it's good or it's bad or it's growing or decreasing, and how what will be your advices to increase our skills? I mean, your suggestions to keep pushing.
Push.
on this.
I have one tip, just one tip. Don't use flares, the God rays flares. Don't use it, please. I've been seeing a lot of Mexican works with that. If someone here is using, don't need to say, but don't use it anymore, please. Remember the Indian, my Indian friends.
Sir, share your tutorials.
Give me your 5 seconds, please.
I mean, just from my point of view, I mean, obviously I see thousands and thousands of renderings every year. Certainly every country has its own unique style. Not 100%, but usually you can tell the region of the world that a rendering comes from by the kind of traits that it has. I don't ever consider any one country to be subpar. You know, only bad artists come from that country, or only good artists come from this country. I think talent is borderless in that sense. So I wouldn't say that I have any one opinion or another over work that's done in Mexico. I know, and I have friends who are in Mexico who have really successful companies who do really, really amazing work that's on par with, you know, what you would see anywhere else in the world. So our quality work is quality work. I mean, that's...
I agree with Jeff. And I receive a lot of renders every day from guys who, take a look what I can do better and something like that. And I really can't think about, the Mexican work has this kind of style or something. It's kind of similar. When the guy is learning, they make almost the same mistakes in every country, right? So there's not a focus on Mexico that I can say, I think.
I would like to say, because I the one in ARX who used to travel all around the world scouting people, okay? I did visas for several people. I have Americans from different nationalities. In fact, in our office, we hang different flags, and each one is for different nationalities that we have in the office. So, but in order to answer your question, Daniel, is that I like a lot the Mexican artist, and I found that there's a lot of really good artists in Mexico. Recently I was facing a decision in ARX because we tried to expand our production, and one of the places that I considered to open a new office was Mexico, okay, for that specific reason. So in my case, I like a lot. In fact, last year I returned. Okay, and since then, there's four new Mexicans working in our office. So that's mean that in my case, I personally admire what Mexico do. But of course, as Jeff said, each country has different styles. And of course, you need to find something that is compatible with your own style. Because if you are marketing for Miami, okay, can you do gray images for your clients in a cloudy day with a rainy, for someone who is trying to marketing a condo in Sunny Isle? No, it's going to be difficult. So, of course, the style of each nationality is linked with the environment that they used to work. Mm. So, and that is why it's important, because for me, I don't like the indie style, okay, or the very pinky colors from the Chinese companies, because it's not my style.
I hate this.
But does it mean that it's wrong? Well, what is wrong or what is right? What is good and what is... Well, that is absolutely relative from my point of view.
I have just a general advice, not just to Mexicans, to anyone. So I think the best way to learn, if you are, I know it sounds a cliche, but the best way to learn if you are learning from your colleagues. I have 10 colleagues at MIR, and if we have a meeting, we have two meetings a week. So for instance, I make a sketch, and I get almost two comments from each person. Sometimes it can be 10 or 20 comments only for one sketch. And that's improving my work, and this gives me lots of experience. So don't be shy to give critics, your colleagues, or if someone asking what's your opinion. If it's not that good, just tell it to him and just discuss it. How can you make it better? That's what we are doing at MIR. We are discussing everything, even the smallest thing on the image.
That's why it's so good.
Yeah.
You get so many people. I think another thing that's important, you said that in Mexico, what is our perception of Mexico? And I'm sure you'll have a perception of other countries and say, England, London, Miami, New York, you'll say this is more or less, you identify. And I think there's also another thing, which is the big companies are generally in the places you think probably will produce the best things or have that perception. And generally speaking for London, I mean, Nikos works with Cityscape. I mean, all of us work with various companies. And in the case of London, there's like such a mix of people from around the world. There's much less English people in the countries, in the companies than there is foreigners. So it's a big mix. So you can't really catalog something or a country with a perception of it. I think that's kind of incorrect. And the second thing is in your skills and improving skills, I guess, as Thomas was saying, criticism, criticizing work in a good way, this is all very important for growth. And I'm a big impulser of practice. Practice is the only thing that's going to make you perfect. And I was just chatting with Esteban, wherever he is, and he was asking me, you know, about these questions. And I take a lot of time. I do production, and this is a big error if you're running a business, because it's too much. But I still run production. I still love to work on images. Maybe one day it will be hard, but a lot of what's got me here, I believe, in being with all these creatives and amazing artists, is actually just pushing forward and doing my own images. I think every time I've progressed, I've made like a big image. I've made something personal, and I learn from it. And these are the images I can take 6 months, I can take a month, I can take 3 weeks. I do a lot of them, and I don't share online because probably half are crap and the other half very good or not so good. It really doesn't matter. What matters is the kind of the trip that gets me to where I want to go in my professional work, so that once in a while I produce a good professional image. It's just the practice, really, and kind of admitting defeat once in a while. Not everything is amazing, and just pushing forward and getting the mindset of being like an athlete. You're in competition, you have to kind of train every day, you have to push, and that's eat correctly. All these things, right, that contribute into being a great artist and really doing what you love. And I guess, yeah, that's my intervention.
Well, yeah. Well, we're gonna finish with the panel questions, and if you have more, okay, just the last one, and try to be concrete with this, and we can make more questions tomorrow or after here with a beer. You know, this is not the end of the
Coco Bongo.
Coco Bongo for sure will be
tequila shots.
Yeah, I mean, with some tequilas and beers, this guy speaks like Thomas can tell you what is his defeat for the money that Mir get for each image, and yeah, don't worry about that. We only need some alcohol.
It's about the business model that we have in this industry. And it's about what would be the future of this business model in 5 or 10 years, because always this industry is changing. And for example, the architects, the big firms in architecture, they start to create architectural visualization departments inside of the companies, because they know that they need to communicate their projects. So if they start to create these departments inside of the company, what will be our future in 5 years or 10 years? Because our business model in this moment are clients, and we are the solution for the communications. But what will be in 5 or 10 years? Because the times are changing. So you, I don't know, Patricia or Jeff, what do you think
you
about
are
that?
Wondering that about that we are going to lose our jobs in the next 5 or 10 years? Because I think we are not going to lose, and I have an example for this. There were painters all the time, I mean 100 years ago, 200, 500, and people always want to buy unique and handmade stuff, and always there will be market. And you know, computers and CG, it just came, you know, in the 20th or 21st century, in our century. But still, there are painters. My colleague is a painter, and he's selling things. So I think in 10 years ago, we will have jobs. So I think we don't have to be afraid.
Yeah,
I don't afraid.
I have a good kind of story or analogy, I guess, that's very similar. So when digital photography, I mean, the photography, you know, industry has existed for, film photography existed for a very long time. And when digital photography came about, I think most photographers thought, that's it, everybody's going to be able to shoot photos. And to a certain degree, I think it's opened up you know, so everybody can shoot with iPhones, you know, people can take photos, doesn't necessarily mean you're a good artist. Certainly there will be people within architectural firms who have a talent who now have tools that are easier to use that, yeah, maybe they will do that, but do I think our whole industry goes away as a result? No. No.
No, I think when I started doing architecture, I was an architect, and I was hired at Gensler, a very large architecture firm, to start their 3D department and do all that stuff. But I came from an architecture degree, so they had a whole department of people and doing things and working and doing visualization because we didn't have much access to ArcViz. ArcViz got so good that department need went away. Right? There is need. There's two different kinds of rendering. So there's rendering for design purposes, iteration, etc. And then there's rendering for marketing or different ideas of that. The architects don't necessarily want to have their own department for that. They can go out and get a whole slew of ArcViz companies to make that rendering happen. So I don't think that's going to go away at all. I think that in fact, I just talked to Gensler now. Gensler is 4,000 people. You would think they would have their own ArcViz department. Not true. They go out and they bid it out like anything else. And they get really great renders, and then they don't have to worry about it. Do they render in-house? Absolutely. Do they do beautiful renders for marketing and for all that stuff? No, they do that elsewhere.
I just finished a consulting job for Unity a few weeks ago, and we interviewed people specifically asking about VR technologies and real-time technologies, specifically around how does that change our industry. I mean, once everything becomes real-time, does that mean that nobody has jobs anymore? And when we spoke to companies like Gensler and a lot of the big architectural firms, and we asked them, you know, how are you using these technologies? Is it going to replace final frame rendering? You know, where is it being used? And almost unanimously, everybody said it's being used in the design process in a phase where most people in our industry aren't involved anyway. So I think it's going to help them probably refine their design processes and better communicate what they're trying to do within their own design teams. But I think most of what we do as visualization artists is in the final frame marketing imagery or competition work, when that's not necessarily something that they're going to risk on an internal artist, probably.
I think that the question is really good, and it was a question that I used to do myself. Where are we going, basically, in order to be prepared of what can I expect? I'm actually managing a team of 50 guys, a little less. So I'm in some way responsible for several families, and it's my obligation to think in that direction. So how do I see the industry in 5 or 10 years? I think that the industry is going to change completely. First of all, the next year we will see, and we are going to be able to see the first gadgets for virtual reality, Oculus Rift, Steam VR, Gear VR, and some other stuff. Augmented reality is going to jump on board also. So in some way, all of us, we need to reconvert our knowledge. And the guys who are going to be able to reconvert themselves are going to be successful, and the ones who are not going to be able are going to be difficult to survive in a very competitive environment. In fact, Jeff mentioned it, real-time virtual reality. I think that is going to be the big change in this industry. I think that why someone is going to get and pay X amount for a rendering, that's from the technical point of view, from a real-time engine like Unity, or, well, probably Unity is not has the level of quality, but in some cases Unreal has. We have been tested real time for the last 2.5 years, so we have been working a lot in real time, and we spent a lot of resources from our end for that. I think that at certain point, in fact, we are actually doing a job that is not using 3D Max, and it's going to be an internal test, because what we would like to see is that if this something, well, Max, you need it to in order to get the shapes, okay? So you need, for modeling, you use Max, but We are not doing the typical post-production, the typical time frame or timeline that we used to set up for an animation. We are getting from real time, from screen capture, from the real engine. So that is changing in some way. Of course, the level of quality is not the same that you can get, but it's a matter of fact that soon the real-time engines will have the level of quality that is going to change the industry. In fact, nowadays, I'm still having clients who used to prefer to hire freehand drawings for perspectives. We, as an industry, we were a substitute product. Does it mean that no one else is using a freehand perspective? No, some clients specifically request that because the freehand drawings is more vague in some way. There's not so much definition, and in some cases, the clients are not looking for definition, not looking for hyper-realistic mode. Okay, so in the same way, probably it's going to be different. So I think that in 5-10 years, the industry is going to be quite different. Does it mean that the industry is going to disappear? No, it's going to be reconverted.
Just one.
So answer, Tama-san. Be good with this.
I see the point, but I think still the still images, if I have something plus. If you are working in Photoshop, it gives a lot of spice to the image, but if you are going to make an animation with this Unreal engine, if you are not a compositor and you don't have 20 people behind you or 50, you are not going to reach that quality like you can reach with Photoshop, that plus. So that's why I'm not really afraid. I hope you see my point.
So, although I just want to make one final point. You start to see it'll be really quick. Trust me. You see things like real time and all of these VR engines and whatnot, even GPU, CPU accelerating. Start thinking about yourselves. I mean, I'm not trying to answer the question, but what will happen to our industry when all of a sudden rendering isn't something that takes hours or minutes or days? What happens when it's instant? What does that do to our industry? I mean, start thinking about your own businesses when you realize that now your benefit is not the fact that you know how to manipulate a software. Your benefit is that you're an artist. If your business model is based around manipulating software and that goes away, then what do you have left? So something to ponder.
Yeah, I mean, basically painting, I mean, people thought that painting would be dead after photography, right? Painting is not dead. Painting evolved into something different. And I think that the same thing is going to happen here. You have to evolve in two different things. You have to bring value to things. I work for a company that makes rendering software. I know that rendering is going to stop and go away. That's fine. That's good. We'll evolve. We figured it out. We were working very actively figuring out what the future of rendering is going to be. But I think it's still a pretty good deal if you don't have to sit there and wait for 3 hours for a render, right?
Okay.
It's not working.
Oops, sorry.
One more.
Okay, Thomas.
No, I'm just kidding. There's no more.
Okay. Thank you, guys. I think that this will continue tomorrow, today. But thank you for your knowledge and your answers.